listening to Syntax, the podcast with the tastiest web development treats out there. Strap yourself in and get ready. Here is Scott Tolinsky and Wes Boss.
Welcome to Syntax. This is the podcast with the tastiest web development treats. Today we got for you another potluck. We are just wrapping up the summer. Scott and I are just recording like crazy, sort of going ahead so we can take the summer off of recording. And we're like, wow, we've got a lot of potluck questions that we have yet to answer. So we thought we'd throw another potluck in. Some really good questions. So talk about MDX today, ordering CSS. Do you ever use the second property of or second param of JSON stringify? Some really neat ones today. So stay tuned for that. We are sponsored today by, this is funny, two companies that I am using in my next course, but totally unrelated to being a sponsor. First one, Sanity. They are a structured content CMS. Second one is Netlify. They are the hosting for your Jamstack and serverless functions and all that good stuff. We'll talk about them partway through this episode. How are you doing today, Mr. Tolinsky?
Hey, I'm doing good. Getting some dev work done, getting my next course planned out. And for the first time in a long time, I have like 8 or 9 course options that I want to do, which sounds ridiculous, but I keep a long running tab of all the courses I want to do. And then it's like, okay, if I ever need a rainy day, then I have this list of courses to pick from or whatever, if there's not one I'm super excited about. But the problem for me right now is that there's just 5 or 6, I know I said more than that a second ago, but things that I really want to do. So I'm like having a tough time picking which one, not because I don't have options, because I got too many good options.
What are the options? Can you share, or is that a secret?
It's a secret. Unfortunately, okay. I don't want too many good course ideas here, Wes. If you need some good course ideas, we can talk after the show.
Oh yeah, I've got thousands, but I'd love to hear what you think.
Yeah, no, that was simply just a joke because I know you have.
All right, let's dive into the questions here. First one is from Vinny. Howdy, I'm curious to know what you guys think of MDX. MDXJS.com. I'd love to learn more about the pros and cons if you guys have had a chance to use it. So MDX is Markdown and JSX sort of put together. So what it allows you to do is if you have a website and you want to write content, you can write your content in Markdown, but then you can also just use regular React components right inside of your Markdown file. So if you wanted to embed a YouTube video, or you wanted to throw in a React component, or you wanted to, it's sky's the limit, right? Like a graph is probably a really good example where if you wanted to put a graph in the middle of a blog post or something like that, you could do that with MDX. And I personally used it for my own website and it's awesome. It's very easy to work with. Huge plugin ecosystem available for MDX. So if you want to do, what's the underlying layer for it? There's like a package underneath MDX that allows you to use all of these different Markdown plugins for it, which is really cool. It's one of those things where in order to get it working, you need like 15 different packages, which could be a downside. But because of all the packages that surround the ecosystem, you can get it to do literally anything that you want. Layouts for your website, things like that. So big fan of MDX myself. Have you used it, Scott?
Yeah. Hey, I don't know if you know this. I was there when they announced it at Zeit Day, as it was called. I wonder if it's going to be Vercel Day now, but it's Zeit Day. I was speaking at Zeit Day and they had a really great initial, like, what is that, keynote? They had like a really great keynote where Guillermo and all sorts of Tim and all sorts of the people from the next team were all like sort of launching a whole bunch of cool stuff. So It was a really cool thing. I was almost instantly excited about MDX because when you first hear about it, you think, okay, well, is that really that special? But then you think, wow, actually the possibilities for working with this are very, very large. I don't know if you have ever written slides in code. Do you write your slides in code or do you write your slides in slide software?
Okay. Yeah, I've written every slide deck I've ever done has been in code as well.
What do you use typically for that? Because I typically use Spectacle.
Oh, cool. Yeah. I've like for years, I've used just HTML5 slides.js, which came out like, I think like it came out of Google I.O. in like 2012 or something like that. And I've just been building off of that forever. And I've tried using a couple different like frameworks and plugins, and I always get like an hour into trying to like make it work and to get it to work properly. And I don't know what, I always get frustrated with it, and I just scrap it and say, like, I honestly just want my old thing back. Yeah, cause I have like this thing where I write the slides in Jade. I have a Markdown plugin in there. If I want to write Markdown, it will convert it for me, but maybe I should revisit that at some point.
Yeah. The reason why I bring it up at all is because one of my favorite projects using MDX is MDX Deck, which is basically creating a slide deck in MDX. And this was one of the first projects that made me say, ooh, this is so good, because you have the ability to quickly and easily delineate a new slide just by like three dashes. It creates a new slide.
Oh, cool.
So
yeah,
you can create your entire slide deck in just like absolutely nothing. And sometimes when people think about writing code and to make a slide deck, they get like, oh, I don't want to do that. But man, this is simpler to me than writing it in an actual slide program, because all of your data sort of lives separate from the visual presentation of it. So you can look very plainly at all of the words and see if the words are what you want them to be. So I really like MDX Deck. I've been using this for a little bit. One of the things I really like about MDX overall is that it seems to have like caught on conceptually, where it's not just a React thing anymore. So there is a Svelte MDX called MD Svex, and it's every bit as cool as you'd expect it to be. It's fantastic. There's also, from what I saw, there was Vue.js versions, but I have not used Vue.js with MDX before, but I think that's like the perfect use case for these new classes, static site generators, where you're writing everything in Markdown and it's like your whole blog post. And then, oh crap, I need a chart. Ooh, this gets really tough when I need a chart in this page, right? Oh, now you can just drop in your chart React component directly in your MD file. So no, I'm a huge fan of MDX and typically use it whenever I can. In fact, when I first created the new scotttolinsky.com, this MD Svex was not in its current state, so I couldn't necessarily just use it. And I was really bummed out because I wanted to use MDX in my blog. So big fan oh, yeah, myself. Yeah.
Well, one other thing I really like about MDX is you can pass it your own components. So as Markdown renders out code blocks and H1 through H6 and pre-tags and block quotes and all that stuff, in most Markdown parsers, they'll just give you like a class of code or something on that. And with this, it allows you to step in and say, when somebody renders out a paragraph tag or a code block or a block quote, let me step in and use this component instead of it. And then the component will give you all the props of that component. It will give you the actual content of the component. And then it's just a React component from there, and you can return whatever HTML and CSS you want from that specific thing. And I use that a lot in my own website, because I don't have to like add classes when I'm authoring something, or I don't have to add extra markup when I'm trying to author something. It just gets swapped out on the render.
Yeah, cool. So next question is from Johan Shakya. Hello, Mr. West Boss and Mr. Scott Tolinsky. Hello, Mr. Johan. Great podcast. I learned so much from it. Where would you go to put business logic in Vue.js, middle or large scale applications? I try to put business logic in a store, but it makes it hard to maintain such a store. Even with spinning actions, getters, mutations, and files, I end up using vanilla JavaScript files where each file is a class singleton. I was wondering if this is a good solution, or do you have a better alternative? Now, Wes, I know you don't do a ton of Vue work, but I included this question specifically because the answer is there's nothing really different here from the React world comparatively, right? You still have components, you still have business logic, and you still have like state and all those things. So that said, Johan, I usually, when I think about this stuff, I'm not creating that many abstractions. I guess I am occasionally, but I cannot. Like a class singleton just to manage business logic for things. I don't know. Part of the whole componentized universe that we're living in now allows you to sort of write your business logic right there near the template, especially with this latest class of frameworks, whether it's Vue or React, right? You write your business logic sort of right there in the component, and then you can reuse that component wherever you want. So granted, that's a very simplistic look at it. Once you start to think about things like we have Redux, right? Redux has a calls and action. That action, what is it called? Dispatch? Dispatch an action? Sorry, you don't run an action. You dispatch an action. Then that performs another operation, which in turn will return a new set of data. I mean, it's like this abstraction, abstract universe kind of thing, right? So the answer here is like, where do you put this kind of business logic? The answer is to follow community guidelines in terms of how people are doing it in Vue. And so what I mean by this is, because this sounds like a cop-out answer, what I mean is there, it just like the React world has a thousand different state libraries. There's a thousand different places to put your application state, manager state, and your business logic. And one of the main ones is Vuex. Vuex is exactly as it sounds, vuex.vuejs.org. And Vuex is sort of like their Redux style state management, right? Vue action state. So what I would do is I would follow something like this and not really try to invent the wheel yourself here by creating class singletons or whatever. I wouldn't try to reinvent any sort of wheel here and just go ahead and look through some of the large examples of large scale Vue.js apps that exist out there, or at least those sort of guidelines in terms of how to build that.
Beautiful. I have nothing to add there. I think you nailed it. Next question we have here from Amber Williams. I commonly find myself engineering complex programs and left flabbergasted on how to express these ideas to other people when the need arises. I need to explain to them and remember why I did it in a specific way. How can I get better at conceptualizing intricate design patterns or functions, as well as have a better recall for these abstractions? That's a great question, because sometimes like you come back to a code base like a year and a half later and you're like, wait, where was this? Like when you're following around functions for 20 minutes just to sort of understand what's going on. And honestly, there, I think the important thing, and Scott has it here, is just write lots of comments. There seems to be this like anti-comment wave going around lately where people say like your code should speak for itself. And I get this like on Instagram, I've gotten this question from newbies like many times in the last couple of months, and just say like, no, like comments are absolutely fine. It's important to be able to write down how these things work. And if it is even larger than that, like you have this idea of where you have you have one function that generates a bunch of stuff, and then you have business logic, and that gets passed into it, that should probably live inside of a wiki, especially when your head is in it, just because it might make sense to you right now. But if you come back to it a year later, or even worse, somebody else has to come back to it a year later, it's important to have that documented. So stick it in a comment, or stick it in a GitHub wiki or a Notion or something like that, that'll explain how it all works.
Yeah. And sometimes those comments, they seem unnecessary at the time, like specifically comments around maybe failed attempts to solve a problem. I don't know about you, Wes, but have you ever had a situation where you chose not to do one thing one way specifically because you realized it was a bad idea at some point, right? You chose not. So, okay, I'm going to do this a different way. And then you leave the code. You come back to it and you say, oh, hey, this other abstraction of this idea seems like it would make a lot more sense. Why don't I just do it that way? And then you start to do it that way, refactoring or whatever, and then run into the exact same use case that you had already solved before. And you're like, oh yeah, this is why I couldn't do it this way. This is why. And sometimes I leave comments like that into my code that says like, by the way, a future you might try to do this. This is why you don't want to do this. I understand this code looks weird, but until, you know, a full rewrite is in order, it needs to be done this way specifically, you know. So I don't be like, I'm pretty businessy with my comments. Like, I write very, like, very direct and explicit comments. This is what this thing does, whatever. But sometimes you can be a little fun with it, too. And in fact, one of my favorite VS Code extensions, which is Better Comments, allows you to have comments that have different coloring. Right. Yeah. And so the cool thing about that is if you do like double forward slash and then maybe I think one of them says like a question mark for questions or an asterisk turns it green. So I'll use things like the asterisk to be like, note to user, this is why this does this way. Or, you know, there's an exclamation point for danger. To-dos, but I only use to-do for actual to-dos in code. So I would recommend using just better comments, but writing more comments, better comments overall. And don't be afraid to write notes to yourself in the code. That's not just, oh, this is, you know, this component goes and fetches the data, whatever, explaining what the code does. Yeah. Maybe explain a little bit more conceptually, too.
Even like this is not something I've done, but maybe even just a quick little video. Grab there's a free app called Cap, K-A-P, and it just records your microphone and your screen really quickly. Throw that up to Dropbox or even on a, I'm not sure where else you would host it. So somewhere you can host videos, YouTube private video. When your head is in it, record a quick little video, and that will probably be super helpful. I do that for a lot of like my clients that I build websites for. I would just throw a screen recorder on and go through the entire website showing how to do something, because I might forget specifically how to update a content type or something like that. And it's so much easier that just to throw them a video 2 years later than have to like get on a call and screen share with them and that annoyingness. Yeah.
Yeah, I did this for a little while, and I still do this under Level Up Tutorials code blogs, where I do like a video just explaining one small section of the code base and why we're doing things a certain way or why it's cool or novel or whatever. But it does make it really easy. And I've started to lean on this a little bit more heavily, knowing that I like have the ability to quickly and easily record screencasts. So it's like, oh, man, that's like a core competency of mine. Why don't I just record a screencast of something that I'm having a hard time with or want to really explain? Like, if I want to explain some code to somebody else, like, it makes more sense for me to screen record that video and share that video with them. Like, let's say Eric wants to work on a new feature in this one part of the code base that he hasn't touched before. Hey, it might make more sense for me to record a walkthrough of the code and what's important and what's not important, because that will save people a ton of time getting up and running with it. Yeah, definitely something cool thought there, Wes. So next question is from Rafael Davis Hernandez, and he asks, can I get some recommendations for it? A junior dev who has mid experience, but has not managed to complete projects and desperately needs a portfolio. What are 5 projects that you would recommend to build that would significantly help getting a job as a front-end developer, and why? Okay, so the actual end result of the project, whether or not this is like a video movie catalog database or a store or whatever, the actual end result, what is the theme of this thing, does not matter. If somebody does like a Reddit clone or something like that, I don't care about like what the actual site is. But what I care to look at is like the core skills involved in the application. So something that hits an API, something that does basic CRUD operations, something that needs to look nice on mobile, something that has UI refinement, whether or not these are animations or good looking CSS or like a pixel perfect implementation of a design. Those are all the skills you're going to be using day to day, right? Especially, I know this, it seems like kind of ridiculous, but pixel perfect refinement of a design that somebody else created. Hey, I've worked with so many devs who will spit out of the code, and I'll look at the Photoshop. You look at their version, the web version, just say, do these look the same to you? Like, and I don't mean to be rude, but these do not look the same to me. Like, what this, you know, this line, this pixel is like four pixels here, where it's 3 in this one. Like, sometimes I wonder if people just take a look at the PSD and or the sketch file and just like guess when that information is all right there in those files. So I would care less about whether or not this app is a calculator or something like that, but I would care more to really just show those foundations, hitting an API, basic CRUD, nice on mobile, UI refinement, and doesn't run like total dog SHIT. That's it.
Love it. That's super key. I think those are great suggestions. Just most important one is just finish something. Take on something small and make it polished and done. And then that's way better than the graveyard of 40 projects you started but had to quit because for whatever reason it got too hard. You ran out of motivation because, like, I don't know, sometimes I look at people and they just finish all of their projects and it seems like they're super productive, but it's just that they're able to push through that last 10% and actually finish the whole thing.
Yeah, it's actually, it is funny to think about that because I'm like historically not a project finisher. Like I get to that 90%, I'm like, okay, let's get on to something more exciting. But that's like one of the things that like Level Up Tutorials has allowed me to do. It's allowed me to get that feeling while maintain actually shipping stuff because I have to ship something new each month. So it's like, okay, well, if I get through this little bit, I get the reward of getting to do something new next month.
Next question we have here from Andrew. Thank you for a phenomenal podcast. You're adding incredible value to the community day in and day out. Wow. Thank you.
Thank you for an incredible question, Andrew.
Yeah. I am now working on building a Minesweeper game with React. You know how on the computer you right click a flag to disable the cell. I'm just thinking about that. Like, I don't actually think I know how Minesweeper works. I played it a whole lot when I was a kid, but
do you want to run down?
Clicked stuff. Yeah, tell me.
So the whole goal of Minesweeper is to find the mines, to find these bombs that are hidden, right? So you click one square, and that tells you, like, a number. That number, whatever it say it's one, that means that square is touching one bomb. If a square is not touching another bomb, it, like, gives you a whole bunch of more squares to press for free until one of them is touching a bomb. So you have to use these sort of logic and deduction to find where are all the bombs based on these, like, sort of numeric rules you're given of the landscape.
Bomb explanation. So the question is, you know how you hold a computer, you right-click a flag to disable a cell. I am thinking about doing a press and hold on mobile instead. I'm really glad that, like, you're building something. Yeah. You're thinking about mobile as well. Cause sometimes, like, you build something like, yeah, it doesn't work on mobile. But you could probably get it working. I'm not sure how to do either right click logic or press and hold. How can you listen for these events in React? I need some help and guidance. Well, the press and hold is pretty simple in JavaScript. So the way that it works is, you create like a flag boolean where it's called like is pressed and you set that to false. And then when somebody does a mouse down event, so not just listening for a click, but listen for a mouse down event. When that happens, you turn that flag boolean to true. Then you set a timeout where like, I don't know, maybe 400 milliseconds. And then you say after 400 milliseconds, if that flag boolean is still true, then that means that they're still holding their finger down, because the flip side of that is you listen for a mouse up event as well. And when somebody does a mouse up event or a touch end event, I guess in your case, you would set that flag boolean to false. So when somebody touch start, set it to true, set a timer after 400 milliseconds, a second, check if that is still true. Then if that is true, then the user is obviously still holding their finger down. And then you can go ahead and fire off, like I would probably just fire off a custom event called long press or something like that. I'm sure there's a JavaScript polyfill that you can add in and you can just listen for the long press event. But that's kind of how it will work. The other flip side is, how do you listen for a right click? That is an event called context menu. So instead of listening for click, listen for the event called context menu, and that will give you a right click event.
Huh. Yeah, I think like mouse and pointer events in terms of like clicking or touching or whatever, Those things are underrated skills. And the moment you need to pick them up, I think they're exquisitely done in modern frameworks, right? I think that's one of the better things that you can do is write custom stuff. Specifically, I think about like using React Spring or something to do like dragging animations or those types of things, or even frame or motion, right? And I think that like having those type of interaction skills are definitely something that you'll get a lot more use of as you get into more and more interesting developer problems. So very cool. Highly recommend you you checking that out. Man, that Minesweeper sounds a lot of fun. Share it with us when it's done.
Kind of want to build it now. One more thing about that I just remembered is use pointer events instead of mouse and touch events. Pointer events are the new spec in JavaScript that cover both touch and mouse and Wii controller and all of that things. And then one more thing is one like little gotcha you have with that is if you press down and then drag your finger off of the thing and lift up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It won't trigger a pointer up event on that element. So you often have to listen for a pointer out event. And that is when the pointer, the finger, or the mouse has been moved out of the box. So if that's the case, then you also set the is pressing to false because they've essentially moved their finger off of it. So they're no longer pressing it.
Or you could have like a pointer up on the container, right?
Yeah. Yeah. As long as the container goes all the way to the edge of the screen.
Right. Or the body, if you want to have it on the body.
If you were to like click down in Canvas and then drag your mouse out of the browser and then click up, then you come back and the browser still thinks that you're clicking down because you never fired that pointer up event.
Yeah, it's funny. I actually just hit the same thing when I was building my own gesture based stuff in Svelte because there wasn't like a. I don't know if there's like a Svelte gestures library because you can do so much just straight up stuff with Svelte. So either way, I was just doing like the gesture stuff with it. And then it was building one of those like swipers where you not like the Tinder swiper, but like more or less like when you want to delete kind of swiper, that kind of swiper.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Fun. I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I know those projects underrated. Are way easier than you would expect them to be. Given that, you know, it's a complex functionality, but it's really pretty easy. You just trigger that press down, animate the value, and then determine how far you've moved it and use that value to trigger an event. Very simple. Okay. So building these like kind of complex things, it's a lot of fun. And what can you imagine a service, Wes? Can you imagine a service that gives you the ability to create custom content types and custom forms using your own cool React stuff, like maybe gestures or any of those things? Can you think of a service like that?
I can. I can think that you would use Sanity for that. So if you want to build a headless CMS, you can go ahead and grab Sanity. And the cool thing about Sanity is that Sanity Studio is the CMS that you'd expect to interact with and change your data types and update and delete and things like that. But it's a React application that you have access to. So if you want to be able to make your own custom swipe and delete on specific elements because that doesn't exist in the CMS, then you can go ahead and make your own custom inputs, which is really cool. I just recorded the video yesterday for my upcoming Gatsby course of us creating our own custom input. It's really cool because they give you all the handlers and the helper functions and the input values, and you just have to handle binding the input to these methods yourself. So check it out. Your next project, if you need a headless CMS for your project, check it out at sanity.io/syntax. And that's going to get you double the free usage tier. Thanks so much to Sanity for sponsoring.
Cool. Yeah. I want to build my own interface for Sanity, where if I do like a two-finger swipe on a component, then it will just delete all the collections that I have. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that you could totally do that. Right. You could use self-destruct pointer events. I think pointer events tells you how many. What do they call it? Like not fingers, because you could use your toes. How many appendages?
Digits
are on the. digits. Okay, that's what I'm looking for.
The digits, man, digits. Hey, well, when I was in biology in high school, I had to do a report on extra and missing digits. So digits, sometimes you have more digits than five, and maybe that should be something to think about. Okay. Don't implement five-finger swipe.
Yeah, like what I'm saying. A secret trick, like a little Easter egg in your application.
A six-finger swipe where you have to actually use your toe if you don't have an extra digit. Cool. So next question here comes from Matt Tavares. Says, what are your thoughts on Sales.js as a Rails equivalent framework in JavaScript? They recently released a version 1.0, and I'm wondering if I should start using it in projects or wait to see if it pans out. So the reason why I picked this question in particular is that Sales has been around since like the start of Node, pretty much. So when I read this, I was like, wait a second, I just heard version one. And sure enough, it did. I have not really had Sales on the radar for a very long time because it was like sort of along with Happy and Express and Sales were like different versions of the like Node quote unquote framework that you could use, despite the fact that Express is just like routing, right? So I personally am very surprised to hear that this just hit 1.0, and I have not looked at it in several years because I just figured it was its own thing, its own little community of people using it. And I was surprised to see that the progress has still been going on, but that it was only at version one. What do you think, Wes?
Yeah, I think it's like probably fairly stable. I don't think that it's going to change on you anytime soon, which is good. So
it's got 21,000 stars on GitHub. So it's certainly not a
wow.
It's not a young pup here.
So this doesn't do like this is not like a front end focus framework. This is a Node framework, right?
It is the Rails of JavaScript. Hence the name.
Oh yeah,
Sales. So it does do a front end,
but it's not like it doesn't have like a specific like front end like in React or anything like that. It'll just spit out a. It does the backend logic, your REST API, your database interactions, your controllers, your MVC pattern, all of that. But it doesn't care what you use on the front end in terms of your React application. Is that right?
My understanding is that you can use anything with it. That could be wrong. Because I do see Sales React example.
Front end agnostic.
Yeah. So they don't care what you use. I would use Sales. It is mature. It has existed for a long time. There's a large community. That said, I don't know. I know surprisingly little about this, despite the fact that I've probably tried it at some point in my life, maybe, you know, 4 or 5 years ago, whatever. I probably tried it at some point. So would I use it? Sure, I would absolutely use it. There are other options available for this type of thing. In case you're wondering, what is it? What's the new one? Redwood? Is that the new one? Or Blitz, which is Next.js and some extra stuff.
I got
stuff.
A sticker in the mail the other day from them.
You got Redwood stickers?
Yeah, well, they just had like a form on their website and I filled it out and they came.
Oh, man. So what is it? Is pretty it that little sweet. Like a little pine cone? Is that what it is? You got a pine cone sticker?
I thought it was a hop.
Hop. Well, that does not make Redwood. Any sense with the Redwood.js.
No.
It's not hop. It's not hop.js. That sounds pretty dope though.
It's true. Yeah, you're right. So it looks cool. The only thing I would say about the Sales is that it doesn't look like it has a GraphQL API. So you don't absolutely need that for your application. But if you are going full hipster, you're going to need a GraphQL API for that.
Excuse me, this project is okay, but you're going to need a full GraphQL. Okay. By the way, if somebody wants to take hopti.js, it's available. Available project namespace.
Hopti?
You've never had Hopti?
No.
HopteA. That seems like something that would be right up your alley, Mr. Bucha. Like, I feel like
craft beer brewed like tea. Ooh.
It's non-alcoholic, or at least not really. It basically is tea, but it tastes like hoppy. So it's kind of like an IPA tea, if you think about it. I've had a couple of brands here that they sell it at one of our favorite poke places. So I'm a fan.
I'm into this. This looks like it would cost $11 for a can, and dude, I would love it.
You know, walk yeah. over to Whole Foods. You're going to go to that small little refrigerator. You're going to pick yourself up out of a hop tea.
Hop tea. All right, I'm in. Next question we have here is from Kenneth Lyerly. Thank you for the pronunciation there, Kenneth. How do you go about creating reusable React components, reusable from project to project? Do you create packages and publish them to NPM, or do you have another method for storing code or components that you will likely need to use again? So if it's a reusable component that I need in multiple projects, I will either just copy paste it, or if it's like, I'm like, okay, this needs to be properly done across all the projects, then I'll go ahead and just bundle it up and publish that to NPM.
Mm. That's a little simple for me, Wes. I got to do it. What you need here is you need to learn a mono repo, and then you need, yeah, actually. So I've been down this road so many times because I have such a hard time with this, and I still haven't found the best solution. I know saying this, people will have their best solutions. I've tried a lot of different solutions because somewhere along the line, I realized I make really, really helpful modules for myself that can be reused across projects. And I've started doing that. For instance, we open sourced, instead of like open sourcing leveluptutorials.com, we started open sourcing aspects of it. So we open sourced our forms library called Fresh. And so people can use Fresh. And then we open sourced our drag and dropper, which is called Drop-In. I have one called Animated Elements. That is actually Animated Elements is a package of mine that I really should make a little bit more robust. But, you know, with timing here and everything, it's just difficult to do these kind of projects to move this out, especially when it's such a pain in the butt to do exactly what you're talking about here. I've found this to be such a tremendous pain to work on a project locally, use that version in your application, whatever the up-to-date modern version is, and still keep everything separate, GitHub repos, those kind of things. I do it right now through separate repos using NPM link, or in my case, Yarn link. And it's just not good. I like occasionally run into some issues where the linking gets all messed up. It's like not transparent. There's nothing in your package.json. You have no idea if it's being linked or not. And it can just get really, really super annoying. So then I tried the whole Lerna thing, and man, Lerna is not fun. I'll tell you that right now. Props to the Lerna people, people out there working on mono repos. Man, this stuff is tough, at least in terms of like getting everything the way you want it specifically. I have a bunch of like custom Babel config stuff that I really want to hold on to that it makes some of that a little bit difficult. So what's the best way right now? The best way for me is unfortunately using Yarn link. Another thing I've started to do recently is in Meteor, you can have local packages just by creating a package directory and writing a package.js file, not package.json. It's like a Meteor thing. And then you can publish them separately. I've been doing those as a Git submodule where you just don't commit anything in the packages folder. And then you keep an entirely separate Git tree as a sub tree of your other one. It is just, it's also not a lot of fun, but it both requires a bunch of, you know, running Git commands until everything works, and then you can be on your way. I'm interested in whatever people have for their best workflows around creating local packages. I typically use TSDX to create my local React packages or my React packages, but I'm interested in seeing what people do beyond the sort of Yarn link or NPM link. And I don't suggest Lerna, not because it's not good, but because I've already been down that route. All right, next question is from Trick PR. What are your thoughts on the Shadow DOM custom elements? Would you use them in your own projects? I'm getting more likely to use them in my own projects as time goes on here. But that said, you know, React is still more useful. Svelte is still more useful. And probably what I find at the end of the day is that I would prefer to build something in Svelte compared to web components right now. And, you know, do you remember like way back when you first started learning React, when there was like sort of, oh, and by the time web components are ready, maybe this can even output to web components, you know?
Yeah.
That was like going on because Polymer was growing at that point, and Angular had the same sort of idea. but it never really happened because web components just never got to the level of usefulness that React did or any of these things. And not that the React team was ever planning on doing that, but that was always sort of this idea that loomed in people's heads of like, oh, wow, if we write our things in components, maybe we can just convert these to web components one day.
Yeah, that was kind of a bummer that, not necessarily a bummer, but I think like the people have spoken, the fact that we're not all using web components and we're all using some sort of framework is that the framework figured it out how to do it better. And as someone who loves vanilla JavaScript and the standard of the web, that hurts me, but I'm not also using it myself. So it's cool, but I'd just rather use React.
Do you know what I would use if I wanted to use web components? I would use lit HTML, which is part of just Polymer. Lit is basically like templating syntax that allows for like individual updates. And it outputs to, because it's Polymer, it outputs to web components. You have to use Polymer with it. But it's just not like great for me. I don't know why. It's just not there to the level of ease of use and whatever. Maybe it will be. Maybe there'll be this like perfect framework. Polymer kind of does a little bit of these things. It's just a polyfill. But maybe this lit HTML, which seems to be picking up steam, will actually have, you know, some energy behind it in those sort of ways.
Next question from Mark Volkman. Seems like a lot of questions come from Mark Volkman. Good ones. I feel like we've said that name a couple times. So yeah, good on you, Mark Volkman. Next question from Mark Volkman is, how do you organize CSS properties within a rule and why? Random, alphabetical, logical grouping, etc. We've answered this a couple times, but I thought we'd answer it one more time. I don't have any sort of system. I like to keep my CSS grid stuff together. I like to keep my positioning, trouble, top right, bottom left together. I like to keep my margin and padding together. And past that's it. I've seen people who do it all alphabetical, or it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me. I've never had like they always say like, oh, there's cognitive overload where you look at something and you have to figure out where it is in the selector. I'm like, no, I just look at the selector and I add it to beside the property that makes sense. So I don't really have a system other than just try to keep like things together and everything usually works out.
Yeah. You tell me, Wes, because I can't remember if this is an extension or if this is built into VS Code, the sort ascending.
Yeah, that is built into VS Code. If you select the lines, it will do it. But I'm sure there's like a prettier plugin that will automatically do that for you as well.
Yeah, that's a good point. I wonder if there is, because that's something that ever so often I'll not like have a kick of, but like if I'm in a component and I'm like buttoning it up and I'm straightening its tie and I'm, you know, tucking in its shirt coattails, when I'm doing those kind of things, I will find a big list of things, whether it's CSS or maybe it's like props being destructured or something like that. And I will select those lines and I will do, command P and then do sort. Or command shift P and then sort lines ascending. In fact, no joke, Wes, if I just do command shift P, the very first recently used command is sort ascending because I just use it all the time. So when I'm like going through my code, go through, use this sort ascending, and it probably makes absolutely no difference at all, but it makes me feel good. So that's why I do it. You know what else makes me feel good is hosting my website on Netlify. Because it's so easy. Let me tell you, I'm an original Netlify fanboy over here, and it absolutely shows. We talk about Netlify all the time on this show, and I'm so glad to be talking about Netlify again. I host everything on Netlify. So if you want to host any of your front-end code or code with serverless functions or anything like that, you want to check out netlify.com/syntax and sign up. And people often tell us that, like, dang, I had no idea Netlify was so easy. It is so very easy, whether or not you need to get a GitHub project just up and running in no time. You got a Sapper, a statically generated site, or a Gatsby site, any of that stuff. Maybe you just have a straight up HTML file. You know what I put on Netlify? I put my slides, my MDX deck. I put that on Netlify just to have it available, right? You know, don't have to host it somewhere else or whatever. Just throw it up on Netlify. And it's so fantastically easy and free to get going that you won't want to throw up everything on Netlify that you have yourself just to experience it, just to have it up someplace, just to test it in production and check it out. I mean, they work with just about anything. Not to mention, they have some very fantastic tools that allow you to make some really more complex applications, whether or not that's like super simple serverless functions, DNS-based analytics, or a split testing, forms, media. It's just endless, the kind of stuff they're adding. They're one of these companies that is constantly innovating on the web, and it shows because everyone who tries Netlify doesn't stop talking about it. So check it out, netlify.com/syntax.
Just a quick note on the last thing that we had. Prettier does not order your CSS properties either logically or alphabetically, because there's a whole like lot of little edge cases where if you have a mix in, or you have like flex flow and flex direction, and then like the order of your CSS properties often matters, especially like if you've got like you have your regular margin and then you want to override just one of them, and you have margin dash right, and like what if they've reversed? And there's a lot of little cases like that, so not under the scope of Prettier to do. And like, I would do it if a tool did it for me properly, but I'm not going to spend any time doing that.
So tool makers out there, make Wes a tool that does it automatically.
Yeah. I don't know that it'd probably be really easy to make a proof of concept, and then it would be death by edge cases.
Death by edge cases. Right. Yeah, totally.
Next question from Codefinity, also another big submitter of questions. Have you ever used a second parameter of JSON.stringify for anything useful? So I had to look it up. I was like, oh no, JSON stringify has the first param is obviously the object that you wish to stringify. The second param is something called the replacer. I'll talk about that in a second. Then the third param is a string or a number for what you want, when you want to use to indent. So you generally, you could pass a space or a tab, or you could do an arrow or a poop emoji if you wanted. And that will neatly format your JSON based on indentations of what you pass it. The second argument of JSON stringify is a sort of like a map function where it takes in the object value and the property and value, and then you can return whatever you want for that. And like, quite honestly, I've never used it myself. And I was just like looking like, what would you use that for? And what it seems to be is if you want to filter values out before you stringify and send it over the wire. So if for whatever reason, before you stringified something, you needed to clean up an object, you could do it that way. And then also, like, remember we were looking at like, there's now function.toString where you can convert a function's actual code to a string.
Yes. Yeah. Now remember. Yeah. Yeah.
So like, I'm thinking like, okay, well, like JSON stringify doesn't parse methods. It just removes them. But I was like, well, maybe you could use a replacer function to add in the code of a method now. So maybe.
Yeah, I've not used this for anything useful. I didn't even know it existed, to be honest.
I didn't know what it was until about 20 minutes ago.
Yeah. So no, I have not used it for anything useful, but it seems like it is possibly useful. I'm interested in hearing if anybody else has actually used this for anything in their day-to-day. Last question is from Nate Spillman here. He says, hey, Scott and Wes, getting my first web dev job at an actual software company a year ago opened my eyes to the vast difference between educational repos and the absolute jungle that can be enterprise code bases. Nate's dead on here. It's a safari out there. So I've also learned the importance of writing code that can be readable later, ensuring any hacky workaround is replaced with a pattern seen elsewhere in the code base, etc. My question is, are there resources for these sorts of topics for folks trying to break into the industry? A lot of tech topics revolve around how to get your code to run, which feels like half the battle. Where can juniors find more resources on robustness? Now, okay. So I think the reason why you're not going to see a ton of this, Nate, is because it's, I want to say, a bigger problem than JavaScript, right? These are conceptual issues. These are planning things. So you most likely won't find this information around like here, like, take this JavaScript course and all of a sudden you're going to learn how to write dry code or correctly abstract code, whatever even that means. My suggestions to you is to, one, get good at commenting, two, get good at functional programming, three, read a bunch of books on programming. So there's even one, a repo that I always suggest called Clean Code JavaScript. This is going to teach you a lot about writing like maintainable code in terms of like, hey, you know, these patterns, follow these patterns. Oh, naming things, follow this kind of naming pattern. And I don't want to like toot my own horn here, but I made a course called Better JavaScript that really focused on a lot of these principles. It's like, how do we name things in JavaScript to make them readable, right? How do we name things? What do we do here? Where do we go? Where do we write things? What are the best ways to declare a function to make it readable, lastable, expendable, workable? I'm going to add a bunch more bulls here, but like, where do we go for this stuff? And I think that clean code, reading some of those classic programming books like The Pragmatic Programmer, those types of things will get you a long way. And don't just look in your bubble of web stuff, because a lot of the good information has already been solved by computer scientists who have been doing this stuff in a lot larger contexts for a long time.
Yeah, I think you nailed it there. Not much else to say there. Let's move into some sick picks. I've got a really sick pick for you today, and it's a pool noodle. So I don't like these. Are pool noodles like a thing? Like in Europe?
Like, do you think that's Europe? True? I thought you were gonna. Yeah, I don't. I do not know. No idea. Pool noodles.
I'm sure
they've been around for a long time.
Float. Like in Paris, they're swimming in the river there under the Eiffel Tower. They probably have a pool noodle. Anyways, a pool noodle for, I'm not sure if everybody around the world knows it, but it's just usually what it is. It's this big piece of foam that you throw in the water and you can float on it and play with it. And they often have holes in the middle, and they are awful because they rip, they get waterlogged. And we had a couple just like a couple of years ago, and we had to just throw them out. And I was like, this is kind of a waste that we're buying new pool noodles every year. And we were at Costco, like, I don't know, three or four. What? Are you enjoying this?
Yeah, I am. I'm just like dying that you're like, it's kind of a waste that we're buying new pool noodles every year. Who's buying new pool? I can't even say that word. Pool noodle.
Pool noodle. Yeah, pool noodle. So if you like, we have cottage. So every day we go swimming and they're just always in the water, things like that. So like, I don't know, maybe three or four years ago, we bought these massive, super heavy duty pool noodles, and they are, I'm not sure what's inside. I would like that YouTube channel to cut one open and see what's inside, but it's this like plastic dipped pool noodle, and they're super, super comfy. It's called the, just Google fluid pool noodle and you can see what it is. And we've had them for three or four years now, and they are still perfect. They like support your weight. Like I can float on one as an adult and have my kids on my back and still be supported. And I don't know, it's just like the best pool noodle ever. And we won't be throwing them out every single year. So seems like a really silly sick pick, but I was like looking at them yesterday and I was like, these things are awesome. And if you look them up online, they're like silly expensive. They were like, I see them online for like $80 a noodle, which is silly. But I found, we got all of ours at Costco for like $30, which is still a lot. But
did you say in noodle?
Fluid pool noodle, or they're also called wow water sports dipped noodle.
No, I'm sorry. You said I'm like looking them up in, and then said a word that sounded like noodle.
Oh, no.
Okay.
So yeah.
Cool. Well, that is sick. I've never heard of these at all. Never heard of them. We have a, you know, in those little tiny kiddie pools, like little kiddie pool that has like this giant whale tail, and the whale tail, you hook the hose up to it, and it sprays water out of it. Landon's been loving it. Maybe he needs a giant pool noodle that's larger than the pool itself, but that's as much lake action as we're getting this year. That's for sure. All right. My sick pick here is going to be a VS Code extension. I'm going there. I'm going there. And it is Easy Snippet. I love snippets. I create snippet libraries for myself all the time whenever I do things. And I don't know why I never took the time to say, this could be an extension. So it was just yesterday I was like writing out some very specific comments and I was like, I'd like to have this comment be used on the page in various ways and different pages to have the same sort of comment sort of denoting locations of things. I'm like, I don't want to have to type this every time. So I made an extension and I made a snippet for it because why not, right? Why not make a snippet? So what this extension allows you to do is just highlight, select a bunch of code and then do the command shift P and then type in create snippet or just snippet.
Oh, that's great.
And if you do create snippet, it just asks you to give it a name and you hit type in the name and hit enter. Bingo, bango, it's there. And since it already knows what type of file you're in, it knows what type of file to use this in, and therefore making the entire process extremely easy. You never even have to touch a config. You never even have to leave your file. And then all of a sudden you have a snippet for it. So I've been using this for the past week here and I really like it. I've been making a whole ton of snippets, probably more than I'm even going to remember later. And that's why, let me tell you, part two of this is the little toolbar that it gives you. So it gives you a toolbar of all of your snippets telling you split up based on file type. So if you pop open to your React JavaScript or JSX or TypeScript React, you can see I have a TS React component. It even gives them your names. You can click on them. And when you click on them, it takes you right to the snippet so you can see exactly what the snippet is. So if you're not good at naming things, you can always see what they're named. So I think this is fantastic. Easy snippet. I've been using it a lot and a big fan of this one. In fact, this sick pick was so sick that it overrode the sick pick that I was going to do. So I'm a big fan and wanted to shout this one out.
Oh, that's awesome. That's a sick pick.
And it's not a hugely, it's only 21,000 installs. So get in on the ground floor here.
It's a sleeper.
It's a sleeper pick here. It's a sleeper.
Shameless plugs. I'm going to shamelessly plug all my courses, westboss.com/courses. Check it out. And by the time you're listening, my Gatsby course might be out. We'll see. And it will be listed on that page. Use Syntax for $10 off.
Cool. I release new courses every single month. I have not selected this month's course, as you've heard me talk about already. But by the time you're listening to us, this course that I have not selected yet will be already out. So whatever that course may be, I'm excited. I'm excited to be in the time machine here and see ended up what I went it with and created a course around. So leveluptutorials.com/pro. We have a new course every single month. The most recent one was on modern CSS design systems using CSS variables to create really, really, really small design systems. So it's fantastic. Leveluptutorials.com.
Beautiful. Thank you so much for tuning in. We'll catch you on Monday.
Peace.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.